what it means to be sober-minded.
Now, there's two things I want to say about the last lesson, okay?
The last lesson has not been podcast yet because I wasn't ready to do that. There were things about the last lesson that bothered me. And so I wanted to address them. The first is, when we talk about what it means to be sober-minded, okay, we're talking about restrained zeal, okay? Not exaggerated zeal, but restrained zeal. So when I use the examples of John Eldridge and Mark Driscoll and the Sissy Worship songs, those were examples of exaggerated zeal, okay? It's not that those are necessarily bad. John Eldridge has helped a lot of people, okay? Mark Driscoll has helped a lot of people. There's some of his sermons that I've greatly profited from. So it's not as if we want to throw these guys out, okay? But by me using them as an example, what I'm trying to do is, it's easy, because the need is so urgent, it's easy to become off balance, all right? And that's the one thing that men, we can't be, is off balance. The stakes are too high, okay? Just think about your own lives. You've got a wife, you've got children, you've got a job, you've got a mortgage. The stakes are high, and so we can't afford to be off balance, okay? So that's why I use examples like those different kinds of solutions. The second thing is my fashion updates, okay? My fashion updates have offended some of you, okay? And I don't make fashion updates to offend some of you. I make those fashion updates to mock the culture. That's all I'm doing. It's because our culture is changing. Okay, our culture is changing like it changed in early Roman times. Okay? It's changing in that it is taking all that is traditionally common sense, historically manly, and it's flipping it over, it's flipping it around, it's changing, it's doing something weird to it. Okay? It's taking things that are historically greatly feminine and beautiful, and it's changing them. It's making strange, doing strange things with them. Okay, and so I don't want you to be unaware of some of these developments in the culture. Okay, now the problem is all of the fashion updates I've been sharing with you have been mocking the feminization of what it means to be masculine. Okay, and I could share with you a dozen of those that are mocking the degrading of masculinity or the degrading of femininity. I could do either one of those things. But I'm only doing the one because of the nature of our material. Okay? There are those who look at those kinds of changes in our culture that are becoming more feminine, and there are men who struggle with same-sex attraction. I don't. I struggle with opposite-sex attraction. Okay? Like most men do. But some struggle with same-sex attraction. But I will tell you that both of those, opposite-sex attraction and same-sex attraction, they're basically two sides of the same coin of a problem, and they have the same solution, okay, which is the gospel. All right, but once again, we're only talking about the one and not the other, which is not to, and I said this at the very beginning, just because we talk about one doesn't mean we're against the other. It just means we're just focusing on one, okay? And so we could focus on all of those different things, all right? So that's what I wanted to talk to you about briefly from my last lesson. Anybody want to comment or ask a question about that? Yeah, Stuart. Yeah, and when I think about, thank you, Stuart, when I think about, there are some of us who are going to have to teach our sons to be compassionate and kind to those kinds of men or those kinds of males who struggle with same-sex attraction. That's the problem. That'll be the task of most of us with our sons. But then there are others of us of our sons who are going to struggle with same-sex attraction, who are going to have to teach what it means to be godly, biblical masculinity. Okay, both are going to have to happen. And so by me focusing so much on the one, I don't want to alienate those of you who are sensitive to the other. Okay, and that's part of what I wanted to get at by saying this morning. All right, let's look then again at what it means to be sober-minded. Now, we talked about restrained zeal. Okay, and we said that restrained zeal was three things: that it's smart, and it's sustainable, and it's steadfast. Okay, those are the character qualities of restrained zeal. Now, when we talked about what it meant to be smart, there were two things that I mentioned last week at the very end, and that is calling and capacity. Okay? In order for you, brothers, and I to be, that our zeal would make sense, that it wouldn't be off balance, we've got to focus on our calling and on our capacity. There are so many things that a man can do. Okay? We live in Walmart life. There's just innumerable choices for us to do. But I said, I don't know if I mentioned this or not, but I will now. When we think about calling, okay, we get way too wrapped up in what it means to be called. Okay? I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. But God's providence is the engine of His calling in your life. Okay? God is working out His calling in your life. It's not some secret thing out there that you've got to try to find. All right, that God is keeping at bay until you're 45 and, oh, I finally found it. God is working out His calling, and you'll see what I mean in a minute, by virtue of His providence. Okay? Now, when we think about calling, I want you to think about it in terms of five things. Okay? Five.
Did I talk about this last time?
Anyway.
First one is that you're a son of God. The second is that you're a husband. Third is that you're a father. The fourth is that you're a church member. And the fifth is that you're a kingdom worker. Son of God, husband, father, church member, kingdom worker.
Okay? Your calling encompasses all five of those things. All right? And I call those are the core aspects of a man's calling. Okay? For all of us in here, we are all of these things. Okay? And so when you think about calling, when you think about what it means to live in obedience to the Lord, you should be thinking about all five of these things all the time. Now, we'll talk about this in a moment, but there are going to be times when one of these or two of these is at the forefront a little bit more than the others. But all of them are always there. Okay? And we neglect one of these eventually to the detriment of all the others. Okay? And that's what makes us unbalanced. We focus too much on our marriage, and we neglect what it means to serve in the church, like what Douglas had said earlier. Or we're all, for the officers, we're all wrapped up in meeting after meeting after meeting here at the church, and your kids don't end up knowing you anymore. You know, they go to bed, they get out of bed without you there because you're gone. They go to bed without you there because you're at church. You see, you get unbalanced in any one of these things, and the others are going to suffer. Okay? What do you notice about this list? I do think I went over this last time, because when I asked that question, Stuart gave me an answer. But do you remember what it is about this list that might distinguish it from something else? In terms of calling? Right, yeah. It's other-centered. Okay? This is the Lord. This is your wife. This is your children. This is your church. And these are the places where you live and work. Okay? Men, you're not called to actualize yourself. Okay? That's one of the great unbalanced secular concepts from the last generation. We're not called to self-actualization. God will make sure that we become who we're supposed to become. Okay? He will actualize whatever it is about you that He's created. Our calling is these five things. Okay? These are the core. All right? Questions about that? Okay, now, the next one is capacity. The next one is capacity. Now, ladies, when we talk about a man's capacity, what are the problems with that?
It's limited. You can only do so much.
What?
You should have seen Wes just went.
Okay, it's limited. And what, ladies, what's with that? I mean, what's so bad about that? I can give you 10 reasons why, but what's so bad about that?
I'm already got it.
Okay, he was off the hook. Somebody else. If your husband are really just okay with limitations. Hands? How many of your husbands are fully aware of and embrace their limitations? Hands? Yeah. All right. How many of your husbands think limitations equal weakness? Raise your hand.
Now my wife's got her hand. She's been waiting to get put her hand.
Okay, the problem when we talk about capacity, men, is that you don't think you think you have unlimited capacity. Okay, but that's ridiculous. Okay, because you know you don't. All right, and so in order to be sober-minded, to be restrained and focused in your zeal, in order for you to go after the five, you can't think that you've got unlimited capacity, because you really don't. Okay, you really don't. And when you become my age or older, then you really become more. I was talking to Peter Eck. Okay, Peter Eck is like the bionic man. Okay, he's young, he's strong. You know, he run 10 miles just to say he can. Not me anymore. Okay, I walk 10 feet and I'm already starting to feel some pain. Right. So I was talking to Peter this morning, and I was moving chairs because our room wasn't quite set up the right way. So I was moving the chair mover. Right. And I'm trying to get 7 chairs on the chair mover, probably because I was using it wrong. And I'm like this, and Peter's just watching me. Well, then I finally got it up there, and I'm like, oh, you know, I'm trying to balance it so the chairs don't fall off. And Peter's like, getting old? And I just wanted to drop the chairs.
The answer is yes. I am getting old, right? So my capacity physically has diminished a great deal, but my wisdom capacity seems to be growing ever so slightly, okay?
And that's what I told Peter. I said, there seems to be this thing, Peter, that the Proverbs writer says that that strength is the game of the young man, but wisdom is the game of the old. And I don't know which I'd rather have. Okay? Because like him admitted, I do think that limitations equal weakness. But they don't. Okay? So when we talk about capacity, we're talking about two questions. What can a man do and what should a man do? Okay? What can a man do? What can I really do? As I look at these five things, And I recognize, as I hope that you do, or you'll come to recognize, that you don't have any less than these. You can add to the list if you'd like. You can be the P90X warrior, or you can be the medieval reenactor, or you can be the car guy, the NASCAR. I mean, you can whatever. You know what I heard the other day? I heard, talk about unbalanced manliness here. I was listening to the radio, and there's a thing called gas car. Do you know what that is? Come on, some of you know what that is. Gas car. It's lawnmower racing. See, Wes knows. They souped up lawnmowers.
Gas car. You can be a gas car guy, right? But you can't. You can be all these other things. But the more you add to this list, the more you put these things in danger. Okay? All right? So, what can I really do? You know, you ask yourself, since I must work in the five, beyond that, what can I realistically do without risking the five? And ladies, now I'm talking to you, and you've got to be tuned in on this. You've got a responsibility to help your husband answer these questions in light of the five. Because he already doesn't believe me when I say he's got limited capacity. But you know he does. And if you don't know he does, you need to wake up because he does. Okay, so you've got, what can I really do in light of the five? What should I really do? What should I do, even with the five or more, to keep these things in balance? What can I do and what should I do? Questions or comments?
This is how we are smart about what we give ourselves to. Okay?
I think, Dave, because we don't want to recognize our limitations with respect to capacity. I know for me, I can get into the mode of perpetually being frustrated and disappointed with myself. Because I'm always dropping some ball because I've got too many balls in the air. And I don't do a good enough job prioritizing and limiting what I get myself involved in to stay within the big, to focus enough on the big rocks in my jar. Right.
I also experience the same frustration. My frustration is always about my yard versus this particular yard down the street. I'm serious. I could add to number five, some fancy word, yard something, right? Green grass guru, right? Or something like that. But it's true. If we devote ourselves to what God has actually called us to, then the chances are we won't experience the kind of frustration that all these other things can present. Because I drive by this guy's yard, and the dude's probably retired. So he probably spends 5 hours on his yard every day. Okay? Probably. I mean, I don't know. Or he's rich, so he's got like, he gets new sod every year or something. I don't know, okay? I don't know. So frustration, that's a good one. All right, let's talk about
Will. We're in that discussion with those five before. Would you put having margin? Because there are going to be some times when responsibilities as a father require an inordinate amount of time because of circumstances. Or as a kingdom worker, a ministry you're in, there's crises, and you want to be able to respond. Or you don't have on the list, like, caring for an aging parent, extended family. That part of that might be kingdom work as mercy, but part of it is responsibility as a son or a daughter, where we don't get to schedule when a crisis happens around us, and one of those five, or maybe a sixth, becomes, I mean, clear out the calendar. You know, it could be some of the surgeries we listed earlier. I mean, that just happens.
Yeah.
We got to have the margin of things to be available. Sometimes it's unforeseen, and other times.
Well, it's a good lead in. That's what we're going to talk about when we talk about sustainability. But you're not going to find all of what Will listed. We could locate in here. Okay, like the surgeries for Rudy is here, for example. Okay, the dealing with an aged parent would be here, obedience to the word of the Lord. And we'll talk about. I haven't expanded on these just yet, but I'm about to. But the question is, how can we? What makes our zeal smart? Is these things, but the question for many, like for what Will ask is, you know, are we talking about like 20% each, or, you know, 50, 10, 5, 30, you know, or how do we determine how we allocate beyond the urgency of the moment, because God will oftentimes rewrite our calendars for us, okay, and force us to attend to one thing that we wouldn't be planning on. But what tool has God given you and me so that we may learn to use our time? He knows. He knows all about this. He knows what He's called us to. He knows how He's made us. So He's not going to leave us without a tool to figure it all out. What is that tool? The time tool. It's about time. What is it? It's the Sabbath. It's the Sabbath. It's the Lord's Day. Now, you're going to have to bear with me for a moment, but if you find yourself way off, or if you evaluate your husband and you realize that some of these things are so dusty they haven't seen the light of day in a year, well then, I wouldn't be surprised then if I also found out that you treated the Lord's Day as yours and not His. Okay? There's no magic percentage of time that we allocate. How I do this is very different than how you do this. And it always will be, because it's me, right? And it's you. But there's the only magic percentage, the only hard time requirement that God gives us is the Lord's Day. It's the only one. Of all the commands that God could have elevated to His summary of 10, He put this one as number 4. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. This is in Exodus chapter 20, verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. I mean, He knows that there's something so significant about our use of the Lord's Day that it's going to affect everything else. And what I want to say is that when we come to the Lord's Day, it's like God takes our watches and He resets them and He rewinds them. Okay? If you think about the Ten Commandments, obedience to each one says something particular to the Lord. Now, the commandments are all "you shall" or "you shall not." But thought positively from how we would say it is: commandment number 1: I will have no other gods but you in my life, Lord.
I will elevate nothing you've created to be more important than you. That's number two. I will honor you in all I do, particularly how I talk. That's number three. And I will make you the centerpiece of my use of time. That's number four. The Lord's day is what God has given us so that we will make Him the center, the centerpiece, the foundation, the wellspring of all our use of time. The Lord's day, like tithing, is designed to train us in how to use our time. Have you thought about that before? If you look at the Scriptures and you obey what the Scripture says, clearly, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, and then all of the ways that that obedience was described, morning to evening, you can't come away from that not knowing exactly how the Lord expects you to use your time. But then if we take the next step and we ask why, the why answer is so that you will know how to use the rest of your time. It's more important than our stewardship of time. How do we manage our devotions? We set aside time. How do we support our relationships? Date nights. We set aside time. Family vacations. How do we make money? We spend time working. How do we develop more hobbies? We spend time on them. How do we repair things around the house? With time. Okay, time is very important. It touches every single thing we do all the time. So each Sunday, God gives us the opportunity to hand Him our watches so that He may rewind them for us. Only He knows what lies ahead in the week, and only in Him can all the challenges of the week be met. You just think about what you don't know, what's going to happen Monday to Friday. And if you use the Lord's Day however the heck you want, you might not have what it takes to live in these five Monday to Friday. You don't know what's going to happen. I mean, think about the Trevathan family. What happened on Thursday? I mean, and that ate up Thursday, all of Thursday, and Friday, and Saturday, and tomorrow. I mean, an incredible expenditure of time that was unplanned. We just don't know what the Lord is in store for us and how we're supposed to live in our calling. So He gives us this Lord's Day, and He says, rest in it. See, our dedication to God of the time between sunrise and sunset on Sunday will have a providentially imperceptive effect on you over time. It's like tithing, okay? When you tithe, what do you eventually learn as you look back on, like I can by God's grace with Kim, 22 years of tithing, consistently, all the time. What can you look back on? Time after time after time after time of God meeting our needs in exact amounts at exact time. Now, I don't tithe so that I can 20 years from now look back and see that. I tithe because I'm commanded to. By tithing, I learn that God will provide. He is faithful. Money will pass away, but the kingdom of God will not. Material goods are good, but they're not best. I learned all these things by tithing. Not because I've set out to do that, but because as I obey, the Lord teaches me these things. It's the same with the Lord's Day. If I clear everything out except what He commands, sunrise to sunset on the Lord's Day, over time, I'm going to learn how to balance these five things Monday to Saturday. But if I don't take advantage of the Lord's Day and I use it like every other day, then I will struggle with these all the time. And I will always be unbalanced, always be looking for the quick fix and the unrestrained zeal in this area or that area, you know, thinking that, no, it's 2-hour long devotions. That's the key. Well, that's not the key. Who's got time for that? I don't. I know you don't.
Lines, but you know, the whole concept of margin seems to be a buzzword today's society, and I don't know if it's because we're mismanagers of time, but different men have their way of saying, I need this time to recharge or whatever. So for some guys, it's March Madness, hallelujah, leave me alone for the next 4 weeks,
I'll be a great husband. For others, it's all fair to Saturday morning. For others, it's, I don't know what it might be. But, that's an evidence of a misappropriation of the five, or is there a place where, you know, that is a category? I don't know. I guess it's a struggle for some in different ways. Some might actually need to do some of that kind of stuff more with other brothers to bring sanity, but it was never modeled in the home because Dad worked three jobs, and so all I know is work.
Yeah.
And others, you know, man, if I don't get my at least the back nine in every week, then I'm going to be a monster. You know, so there's a pendulum, I guess, exaggeration.
Okay, it's good. It's a good question. All right. My opinion is those are all proof of imbalance. Now think about, does it really make sense for me? Does it make sense that if I don't sit in a deer stand when it's 30 degrees outside with my feet that are freezing for 3 hours in the morning, if I don't get that time every week, then I somehow can't be a good son of God or a good husband or a good father or a good church? Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. I'm not hunting for food like I have to live off of it. If I did, it'd be down here. It doesn't make sense. This kind of, and I'm not picking on anybody. I'm not picking on anybody. I'm picking on everybody. This kind of rabid devotion to March Madness, that's insanity. Okay? What else? What else could it be? This preoccupation with golf? I mean, you pick what you want. You pick what you want. But if you assign to it, if I don't get this, then I'm going to be, like Reggie's term, a monster. Then, brothers, we got a problem. Okay? And I would trace that problem back to today. This day. That's what I would trace that back to. Yeah, we mismanage time. We do. Why? Because we mismanage this day. That's why. Why else would God make it commandment number 4? Why would He put that before honor your parents? Why would He put that before honor your wife in adultery? Why would He do that? It's because it's the key to all of the rest of those things. Okay, brothers and sisters, if you don't commit yourself to sunrise, to sunset on the Lord's Day, then you're always going to be dropping plates. These five things, they're always going to be unbalanced. You're not going to be able to figure out. You're going to keep talking about margin. I talk about margin too. Why do I talk about margin? Because I don't manage the Lord's Day very well. That's why. I don't manage the Lord's Day. I cut it off at 4 o'clock, if you want to know. I cut it off at 4 o'clock. Not every Sunday, but a lot I do. That's not how it's supposed to work. I cut it off after worship on Sunday evening. That's when I should cut it off. Because that's when it ends. Okay? And so I talk about margin. And brothers, I want to suggest to you that your preoccupation with margin, if you have one, is related to the fact that you can't manage these, which is related to, it's likely that you're not treating the Lord's Day like you should. Now, I don't have prescriptions for you on the Lord's Day, so don't ask me. Okay? You figure that out yourself, but you do it in light of the Word. And brothers, you do it in light of your wife. And you ask her. And you listen. Okay? Because all of these five things, this is your calling all the time. And you can't have what it takes to live in all five of these callings unless you figure out what it takes to live in this day, the Lord's Day. Okay? And I just want to believe, according to the Scriptures and before God and with my own experience, that if you figure out how to give the Lord this day, sunrise to sunset, then you're not going to be talking about margin down the road. You're not going to be asking questions about, should I let my kid play soccer on Sunday? Or baseball or basketball? Or, you know, should we, you know what I'm saying? You're going to be showing up on Sunday, even if it's Super Bowl Sunday, for worship. Because you're going to realize that the Super Bowl, yeah, that's cool, but man, I get to spend time with the living God on the day that He's designed for me to do it. And I know He's going to be there, so I'm going to be there. I mean, in light of that, Super Bowl Sunday, that's ridiculous. I'm just thankful to the Lord the Army-Navy game's on Sunday. I'd be undone.
It'd be a blessing for you.
These last few years. The last 10 years.
All right, I'm going to finish up. I'm not going to take any questions. Last one is steadfast. Steadfast. Okay? With the possibilities for involvement in other things growing every year. I mean, y'all, I got 5 kids. I'm coaching 2 store soccer teams. You know, I got my teenager who's now working Chick-fil-A. I mean, we got all kinds of things to do. Okay? To be steadfast, a man must be regularly assessing his commitments in light of these things. Regularly assessing. Don't think you've got these wired up just because you've got them wired up, okay? You need to be regularly assessing. You need to take a weekend a year where you and your wife go away and you sit her down, brothers, and you say, okay, hon, tell me how I'm doing with these 5 things. And you see what she says. And then together you make changes. Time has a way of enlarging our own opinions of our capacity. Enlarging our own opinions of our capacity. Time doesn't have a way of giving us more capacity. Time has a way of taking it from us. Because our strength starts to fade and fail. Okay? But it sure does go to our heads. And we think the older we get, man, the more I got this. But nope, it doesn't work that way. Okay? So we've got to assess and we've got to engage, brothers, you've got to engage your wives in that assessment. Okay? Because that's what she's there for. Wives, you're there to help your husbands make decisions about how he's doing on these 5. That's your role. Sisters, look at me. That is your role. You can't neglect that role. If your husband gets unbalanced, then your marriage will be unbalanced. His faith will be unbalanced. His parenting will be unbalanced. His church attendance and service will be unbalanced. And his work is going to suffer. And if he's unbalanced, you know what he's going to do? He's going to come right here and you're not going to see him. He's going to work. Because he knows. We know when we become unbalanced. And we all, for some reason, think that our problem is here. Our problem is not here. Our problem is in balance. So sisters, that is your role. To speak up. Speak up and help your husband come to right conclusions about the 5. Son of God, husband, father, church member, kingdom worker. Okay?
Gabe, how do you do that? Not saying that this happens to us, but...
Well, let's do the case study in 2 minutes. Okay, the case study in 2 minutes. It's a good question. Okay, sisters, you got to have a no-nag policy. I'm just saying, nagging is it's ungodly. It's unsightly, you know. I mean, it sounds terrible, looks terrible. It doesn't befit you at all. It's not beautiful. So, you got to have a no-nag policy. Okay, so that's now we got that out of the way. No-nag policy. Now, remember, we looked at this last week very briefly.
Oh, I need to define that. Anybody want to give a definition of that? Yes.
I don't think we have enough time.
We don't have enough. No, it shouldn't take long at all. Let's go with what we should do and see if we can figure out what nagging is here. Funny. Okay, the first stop in all of this was it's 1 Peter 3:1-6. You've got to analyze yourself, make sure that you're living as God calls you to live, respectful and pure and gentle and quiet and all of that, like he says in 1 Peter. Right, that's the first thing you do. Okay, we're talking about admonishments now. Now, after you're convinced that you're really not giving him any reason to be unbalanced, he just is, then you need to ask yourself, is this a lifestyle or is this just a season? Okay, if you find that this is a lifestyle with your husband, okay, then you've got to keep moving into admonishment. How? Just how is he unbalanced in the 5? You need to know details because he's going to want to know details. Just to come to him and say, man, you're acting like a crazy man. I never see you. That's not going to work. Okay? If you come to him and say, you leave at 5 o'clock in the morning, you get home at 7 o'clock at night, you spend 1 hour with your kids before it's bedtime, they don't know you, they need you, I need you. Details. It's details. Okay? That's very, very important. Okay? Oh, the ground rules. I'll hand you a copy of the ground rules on your way out. So whatever you say to him has got to be according to, you know, how you would want people to speak to you. So here's the case study. My husband goes to work early. He goes to the gym before he comes home. And then he's home late.
Okay? So, is this an incident? Is he training for a triathlon? Okay? Okay, maybe it's a season. If it's a season, then, all right, this is a season. But if he does this regularly, or he's done this for years, no matter what his job is, he leaves early and he gets home late, this isn't seasonal, all right, well then you need to have a talk with him. Okay? But first you got to ask yourself. So observe, interpret. Am I just trying to get him to do what I want? Girls, ladies, you got to ask yourself this. Why does this matter to me so much? Why am I so bothered by this? Do some self-analysis, because that's important. You may want to confront him, and the issue may be you. Okay, so here's the admonishment, Tess. So, Carrie, when the kids go to bed, can you and I talk about something that I've been praying about? Sure. So now the kids are in bed, right? It's quiet. Now, I've noticed that you're leaving early and coming home late, and you do this every single day. We've talked about you leaving later to spend time with the kids in family devotion in the morning, or getting home sooner to spend time with them and with me. Do you have a plan for that? Because he might. Is there some reason why that can't happen? There might be. You would want to know, right? Ladies, you'd want to know. So, let's say the next stage. The kids are telling me that they think you don't like to be with them. Another observation. Okay? It is hard for you and I to get time to talk also. Another observation. You realize that as they get older, time with them will be harder. Now you start talking about consequences. Because your husband, he's probably like this. Okay, he doesn't see what he should see. Help him see consequences. Okay, our kids are 4 and 6. Life's easy. When they're 15 and 17, it won't be. You devote, again, you say to him, you devote a lot more time to your work and your body than you do to your family. You've got to make these kinds of statements because it's true. If he leaves at 5 and he comes home at 7, he always gets his gym time, but you don't get time to talk. Well, what does that say to you? I'll tell you what it says to me. That he loves his work and his body more than he loves to talk to you. Okay? So then you say, I would be happy to sit down with you to think through a schedule that would be more balanced. You're not demanding, you're not nagging, you're saying, I want to help you with this, I would be happy to help you with this. Well, let's say nothing happens. You've got good intentions, but no good follow-up happens, kind of husband. So, you say, you know, you still haven't spent time with me to plan a good family schedule. You still get up before the kids are awake and are home late, and you spend the weekend on the TV. You're still making observations. I've asked you to work with me. I'm going to call Gabe, I'm going to set an appointment, and we're going to meet with him. Because this has to change. And then you call me. Okay? Because that's how you ladies will help him be balanced. Because the stakes are so high. Okay? So, it's a case study example. But it's a process. It's not something you jump on right away. Okay? Ladies, you've got to collect data, make sure that your observations are correct, and then approach him with respect but firmness. But not forget that if you keep throwing, you know, if nothing sticks to that wall and it keeps falling, then you call me or you call one of the elders. And you get us to help because the stakes are high and this is important. All right, I've kept you too long. So why don't we close in prayer.